Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Racism, sexism, harassment, misconduct, even civil rights violations. These allegations made in a $100 million federal class action lawsuit filed against the Metropolitan Police Department. Yes, the D.C. Police Department. Tonight, we do a deep dive into the lawsuit and the issues surrounding it. My guests are civil rights attorney Donald Temple and one of the 10 plaintiffs in this case, senior police officer Leslie Clark. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question about this case. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Officer Clark, Attorney Donald Temple, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Good evening, Harold. How are you?
Let us first say that the 10 plaintiffs in this case are all black women, some retired, some actively on the force right now. Can we kind of go back for just a moment with this case? How did this come about, Donald?
I mean, when you ask how it comes about, sometimes, Harold, I got to ask that question myself. When you look at the allegations in this case that are shared by 10 black women who served on the D.C. Police Department for more than 235 years and in different positions with different backgrounds, and some of them, such as Ms. Clark, with outstanding credentials, outstanding records. But in the notion of there's a place in our society, I call it an intersection where discrimination occurs, where people judge people by their race, their gender, and their sexual preference. And in a place like a police department where there are longstanding kind of customs and traditions, even here in D.C., with the leadership that we have, there are the most outrageous types of practices where these black women officers are being treated differently. But then there's the larger question that you ask, the how. In most organizations and businesses, they have EEO offices. Folk who are listening know that. In this particular case, in this complaint, we attack the fact that the MPD EEO office is implicated in allowing these practices to happen. And when these complaints are filed, they are complicit in ensuring that there is no impartiality and objectivity and fairness and in real interest in ascertaining what happened, and then once knowing what happened, taking the steps and the actions to correct it and to then ensure that the discipline that's outlined by the police department that should be consistent with both federal and state laws is actually executed. And so, for example, Harold, how did it happen?
Yeah.
We asked that question because for the last four years, there's not been a single complaint brought by any of these women or other African-American women that substantiated sexual harassment, notwithstanding some of the most egregious. I mean, I don't know who would write the stuff that's in this complaint that's happening in the police department, some of the most egregious kinds of things, you know, and serious, Harold, serious kinds of things. And Ms. Clark can tell you about the incident where an officer told her that he was thinking about killing Michelle Obama and then showing her a picture of a gun. And putting someone in that situation, and she did the right thing, transcending race, gender. She did what she was supposed to do. And the fallout from that. And there are narratives in this complaint, which is substantial at over 200 pages for each of these plaintiffs, with varying and different experiences bordering on this type of situation to someone even pulling their penis out in front of an African-American woman and she reporting it, and then she's basically targeted. And part of this fallout is that when you complain in the department, when these women complain, they would be targeted and victimized and retaliated against in so many different ways. So how did they come about? I think that's the question of the day.
Let's hear from Officer Clark. Officer Clark, I know your title, senior police officer, as a person who is on the outside. What does that mean, and how long have you been with the Metropolitan Police Department? Kind of give me an idea of what that rank means.
Okay, so I joined the police department in 1989. I retired in 2014. I was rehired in 2017 as a senior police officer. We have full police powers, very limited union representation, and we're allowed to work overtime, unlimited overtime. We're allowed to work part-time. The only thing that we can't do as a senior police officer is get promoted.
Okay. So you know, the bottom line is you're no rookie. You've been around. You know how things you know how they work as a police officer. You know, you know the rules that you are supposed to follow, that others are supposed to follow. You know the rules of the road. How things work. What happened from your perspective? What happened to you? Because I got to tell you, I saw that press conference. I watched all 65 minutes of it.
Right.
It was hard. It was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Some of those allegations that I heard, it was just rough. It was rough stuff.
I think with me, when I reported the officer who threatened to kill Michelle Obama, I did something that most officers don't do or won't do, and that's cross the blue line and tell on another officer. But you cannot sit in front of me and tell me that you would like to kill Michelle Obama, and then you take your phone with a picture of a gun on it and say, this is the gun that I plan to use to do it with. And I called Internal Affairs. Internal Affairs advised me, you need to notify your official and have your official notify us. And that's what I did. And so when I came back, because then I was labeled a snitch. I needed to mind my business. I shouldn't have told on him. So when I came back to the department as a senior police officer, it filtered over into me being back on the department because the officials that I had when it happened were still there, and they don't care for me. So that's why I truly believe I was given the bad assignments. I wasn't allowed to work certain shifts. I was denied leave. I had asked to change one of my days off back in May. I was told no by my lieutenant. My granddaughter sustained second-degree burns. She was 4 years old 2 years ago. I asked to change my tour to help my daughter out with my granddaughter, and I was told no. So everything that is going on with me now, I truly believe is filtering from the Chris Pachano case.
And who is that? Is that the officer in question?
That's the officer that made the threats against Michelle Obama.
So here's my question, and you know, forgive me for being stupid. If it would seem to me that the people who are supposed to protect and serve, if an officer comes to me, a fellow officer, and says that, guess what? This officer just said to me that he wants to shoot the first lady. My first reaction is, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Who did this? We need to address this right away. Let's jack this person up in whatever commander's office we need to do and handle this right away. Why do you believe, you know, Officer Clark, that that didn't happen?
That's a good question. I don't know, because when I called Internal Affairs, they wouldn't even ask me what happened. I told them that I wanted to make a complaint, a formal complaint against another officer. They didn't ask me what the complaint was. All they told me was, you need to call, you need to go to your officials and notify your officials and have your official notify Internal Affairs. So the lieutenant came to me and he said, we have one or two options. I can go to Pachano and tell him not to do this again and talk to him about it, or you can file a formal complaint. And I said, I'm filing a formal complaint, because you don't threaten anybody in the White House, in the VP's house. You don't threaten anybody anywhere. You don't walk around and indicate that you want to kill somebody. Mm. So we took an oath to protect the public, the citizens of the District of Columbia, the president, the vice president, and any other foreign dignitaries in the District of Columbia.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about a $100 million federal class action lawsuit filed against the Metropolitan Police Department. 10 former and current Black women police officers alleging sexual harassment, sexism, racism, misconduct, even civil rights violations. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Attorney Temple, one of the things that I saw during the course of the press conference was one of the other attorneys who spoke said that some of these allegations go back some 10 years. And talk to me from your perspective, whether you have the legal ability to address these things in court, whether they're a decade old or 10 days old. But sure. Talk to me about the issue of culture, because to me, based on what I heard, this seems to suggest that they're based, if these allegations, even half of these horrific allegations are true, that there may be an issue of a problem with the culture in MPD.
Sure, and I speak from the backdrop, and I should say, Harold, I come from a police family. My uncles in Philadelphia, one was a commander and one was a lieutenant, so I was raised around a lot of sensitivity to police culture. One worked in internal affairs, and the other was a commander of a police precinct. Police culture is unique unto itself when you talk about general police culture. We know that from our experience with Black Lives Matter. But when you go into the anatomy, into the body of the police department and how it operates on an everyday basis, when you start talking about assignments, when you start talking about ratings, when you start talking about changing your shifts, when you start talking about what happens in the lineups, what people do, and then you start talking about the hierarchy of the police department. What we know as a code of blue then translates into the everyday workings of the police department.
And then when you start talking about filing, when you talk about discrimination, understanding that discrimination is vicious for some reason. I mean, if you add gender to race, and the police department, I always think about when you used to watch the Western movies and the cowboys come in on their horses, shooting about and everything, and they go in, and then they have a certain attitude to the people in the town and then to the women, et cetera, and they do what they want, and nobody rebuts it. It's kind of a variation of that theme here. You know, there's a culture of disdain for sometimes inside the department that is charged with enforcing the law and protecting the public interest. There is a culture of disdain for that which is law.
Well, hold on, Donald. I want you to finish your point. But before I go to the break, I did want to first mention that we do have a statement that was released after that press conference from MPD. From a spokesperson, and it does say, and I'll read the statement, it says, while we cannot discuss the specific allegations due to pending litigation, the Metropolitan Police Department is committed to treating all members fairly and equitably throughout our organization. We take these allegations seriously, and we will be reviewing them thoroughly and responding accordingly. I need to take a break. I'll read that statement again on the other half. And also, we're going to talk to Tony, calling from Bowie, James, also from Upper Marlboro, and we're going to take more phone calls. Lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Insight segment on the Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. We are talking about the $100 million federal class action lawsuit filed against the Metropolitan Police Department by 10 current and former black women police officers. They are alleging civil rights violations, racism, sexual harassment, sexism, misconduct. My guests are civil rights attorney Donald Temple and one of the 10 plaintiffs in the case, senior police officer Leslie Clark. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to the phone lines, I want attorney Donald Temple to finish his comment about what appears to be a cultural deficit in the police department based on these allegations.
Yeah. Let me answer both of your questions. The statement that the chief of police made and the issue of the culture. And let me answer it this way. These 10 women are incredibly brave and courageous, but the details surrounding their experiences are documented and well documented in over 100 pages. The narratives, the specifics are detailed. And what's significant about that, to the chief of police's point, he cannot speak after 9/22/21 when his complaint was filed. What did the department say or have to say before the complaint was filed? These very complaints and issues that these brave and courageous and these brave women are raising have been brought to the attention of police management well before this complaint. They were brought to the attention of our city council well before this complaint. So the fact of the matter is that this complaint documents extensively things that the chief of police either knew or should have known. It's not even a question of it being inexcusable. It's outrageous that the chief of police would not know that his EEO office has not sustained a single race complaint, race discrimination, gender discrimination, or retaliation complaint in 4 years. He should know that the chief executive in that office is complicit with the management of the department in
chilling these complaints and not conducting objective and impartial investigations. These women, and not just these women, this complaint was filed on Wednesday. On Thursday, we've gotten over 50 calls from other women, not just black women, who have complained. And Pam Keefe, my co-counsel in this case, laboriously met with these women and documented and listened to their stories and documented it. And so it explains a culture where you're afraid to speak out, because if you speak out, you're going to be ostracized. It explains a culture where you're going to be written up and discipline is imposed on you, performance and improvement plans that are without merit, but when you challenge it, there's no EEO office and there's no accountability. And so people are allowed to take advantage of people who complain or seek to have checks and balance and to have laws that are on our local and federal books.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the culture. The culture is one where there's nobody to protect you and people are doing what they please.
Yeah. Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Thanks once again for taking my call, Mr. Fisher.
Sure.
I can relate, and I applaud these women for coming forward, and I'm actually surprised that it's not more than 10. And let me say that it's not limited to just the women. It's the men also that they come forward. I was on the department at the same time as Clark was, and they had a system which we called the good old boy system, which means they looked out for their buddies, and they were majority white boys who got away with anything they wanted to get away with because they knew they had somebody, internal affairs or whatever, to cover their backs. And that's my comment. Mm.
Tony, thank you so much. Let me go to James, calling from Upper Marlboro. James, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, like the officer said, I was officer for 30 years, and I'm surprised that these women had the courage to come together to make this complaint. This has been going on for years. Like you said, a white officer can do a certain offense, and a black officer do the same offense. That officer who's black is going to get double the offense. You have the lawyers for the city who's supposed to represent the police department. They're in cahoots with the chief, with the district. They don't protect you. A black officer has no protection, and he can't go to anyone for help. He has to weather the storm and hope that he prevails in this some way. Like I said, I think the young ladies, all 10 of them, had courage. And, yes, they're going to be singled out because they went against the code of blue. And this is something that's been going on for a long time. I know you can't resolve everything in 30 minutes in a talk show, but I think it should be brought out and should be looked at. That was my comment, and thank you.
James, thank you so much. I appreciate it. But is this, you know, Officer Clark, is this a code of blue or is this the code of men? And the other question that I do have, while I can assume based on the context of his last name that the officer that you brought up is not an officer of color, but are all of the officers about which this lawsuit is filed, these aren't all white officers, are they?
The officials, yes.
They are?
Yes, they are. All my officials that I've named in my lawsuit, my complaint, are white officials. And so I can only speak for the ladies in SOD, which is
SOD
tonight.
Help
yes,
me with
Special
that.
Operations Division. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Special Operations Division. So it's myself, Karen Carr, Kia Jones, Zenobia Brinkley, and Tabitha Knight. So we got together. We were the original five officers in this lawsuit. We got together because we were all tired of the same thing, being bullied, being retaliated against, being discriminated against. And we decided that we were going to do something about this. And we stuck together and we made it happen. And I believe it's a code of men, not a code of blue, because all of the people, other than maybe one person who's a female, everybody in this lawsuit are men.
Now, let me ask you this, Attorney Temple. There were also, you know, allegations of sexual harassment. Were those also only white men? Were those allegations also white men?
No. There are, as you say, whether it's men, it's white men, black men, and a coat of blue, mm-hmm. kind of overlaid and overlapped. Because it actually filters out, and it's interesting dynamic, Harold, because it actually filters out into the street. You know, so
what do you mean by that? Street,
so if you have a black woman on the scene and something is happening, for example, part of the complaint talks about a black person being dead in the street, shot dead, and then the white officer's reaction to that, or white officers do something that's wrong, or black officers do something that's wrong, and then someone reports it, you know, how they're treated and isolated. And so the accountability void moves from out of the workplace into the street. And that's where the code of blue is implicated, because then people are silenced and they're not to report the wrongdoing, whether it's wrongdoing in the workplace or wrongdoing on the street. And it's the same officers, because here's the rub, Harold. When these officers are reported and they're not disciplined, what we've seen and what we document is that police get promoted. And the same policemen that are getting promoted because of the old boy system are police that are doing things that are patently wrong. So they take those attitudes with them up into the higher echelons of the police department. And that's what defines this quote-unquote old boy network,
old boy system. Talk to me about one of the things that I found outside of the allegations of harassment and bullying from person to person. One of the most chilling things that I heard during that press conference was this issue about EEO interview recordings. Talk to me about those allegations, because I think people need to hear that. That was really frightening to me, because just about every large organization, business, public, private, has some kind of EEO, human resources office.
Well, obviously, the EEO office, in whether it's in a business or a government, D.C. government, is designed to ensure the protection of its employees and anti-discrimination across the board, and it's designed to receive complaints and then to document them and to investigate them. And there are many, many rules that govern that process. In our complaint, unlike many complaints, we have affidavits and declarations of three employees, two former EEO employees and one present employee. You're talking about courage. You're talking about a mountain of courage, where they discuss the way that office functions and operates with regard to those complaints. And one of the practices is that the head of that office would have these tapes and put these tapes of these complainants into a system and then share the tapes with and collude with management regarding the content of those complaints to ascertain how they can then not address, Harold, the actual substantive charges, but then how to essentially sabotage the complainant and retaliate against the complainant. This is as a practice and as a pattern, and it's gone on time after time after time after time. So this is something that is unusual. If someone makes a complaint against me, I'll know about what the complaint is. But for someone to tape the conversation and then to share the tape conversation with management and to sit and literally to deliberate and think about how to go after Ms. Clark or how to go after Ms. Greer or Ms. Lockerman. See, that's contemptuous and that's outrageous. And it's not a question, Harold. These are things that are pretty well documented, which makes this case, what it is, which is almost like we've never seen a case where we have so much evidence where so many black women in a police department have come forward with such specific and detailed information and documentation.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Pam. What's on your mind?
Hi. How are you tonight? Thank you.
Sure.
First of all, I want to say to the woman, and I'm sorry I don't remember her name.
This is Senior Police Officer
back.
Leslie Clark. Go right ahead.
We have your back. And you are not alone. We may not be there with you, but we have your back from the outside. And this does not go on just in the police force. I'm sure you know that. It goes on in every workforce in this country. I am a federal employee. I work for TSA. The discrimination is palpable. It is very palpable. I was reprimanded about 2 years ago for having a meeting with a white male. He was my supervisor at the time. He is no longer my supervisor. And he asked me about something to do something, and I said, well, I'm not supposed to do that. It was not a screaming match or anything. He wrote me up because he said I was being insubordinate, to say the least, that my tone and the way I spoke to him was too aggressive in something of that sort. About 6 months ago or so, a white woman was in his office, a friend of mine. He said something to her, and she told him that he was an idiot and he needed to get himself together.
Mm.
He has yet to write her up, and he did not write her up. The reason I know this is, like I said, she is a friend. She's not a racist. I can honestly say that. And she told me what she said to him. And I said, did you get written up? She said, no, he didn't write me up. And I just went, uh-huh. Later, one of the other supervisors in that department, who at the time when I got written up was over him, okay, and is still over him. I said something to him about 2 weeks later. I said, yeah, I heard so-and-so said such-and-such to so-and-so and didn't get written up for it. And
yeah.
he said to me, that's because she told him he was wrong in a polite manner.
Yeah. Yeah. Pam, you know, one of the things that you're saying is that this is, I think this lawsuit will have a chilling effect, not just on the Metropolitan Police Department.
That's right.
Yeah. But
that's
on,
right.
on many public
exactly,
offices.
Harold.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So thank
one
you.
More thing,
yeah,
I've got to go. Okay.
I've got to go. But thank you so much for your input. So here's my question, Officer Attorney Temple. Have any men come forward and spoken out about this?
We have spoken to men, and mindfully,
As the caller just said, I mean, and we haven't been able to talk to everyone. I've gotten calls and messages, and Pam Keith, who is pretty much developing these narratives, has spoken to men and to others, and Latino women and others. And so the problem, Harold, is that, and this is what this complaint says. This complaint is certainly about these African-American women, but more so, it's about a system that's in play, and it is a system that it's not possible when you have a malignant cancer like this in a police department in the nation's capital that has metastasized into the daily playing out of the violation of the rights of women in such a pervasive manner. And what's more important now, since the chief has said we are investigating it, now that people really know this is a mosquito on an elephant's ass. Okay, there is a problem there, and it's pervasive, and it's ominous. And the complaint, the reason why it asks for $100 million is because the department needs to have an outside special master come in, and we need to take these issues seriously. And this whole EEO function, and maybe even at the management level, needs to be overhauled. Harold, I'm not so sure, and we are looking at it, I'm not so sure that some of these violations are not criminal.
So, and that was actually my next question. Outside of the $100 million part of this, what would you like to see come out of a successful lawsuit?
Well, we talk about it in our complaint, and it's called declaratory relief. We're essentially saying that there needs to be an overall. There needs to be, what would I like to see and what we would like to see? We like to see a special master. We like to see the cancer attacked and treated. And in that regard, there needs to be training. There needs to be discipline. You need an EEO office that's uncompromised. You need managers that are going to ensure the enforcement of law. And as the union representative said, when you saw the press release, the gentleman, Mr. Rosario, was there, was even more aggressive. He specifically spoke about people who needed to be fired. I don't know. That's a question that the government leadership and the department will have to make. But the status quo is absolutely unacceptable as a matter of law. The department is violating the equal rights of African-American women, allowing, and we talked about the race side. We didn't talk about the sexual harassment side and the kind of conduct that has taken place with regard to some of the plaintiffs here. And that problem, which is also pervasive.
So here's a question for you, Officer Clark. You said you joined the department in 1989, retired in 2014. If you were aware that these things were happening during your extensive service, why come back?
Well, when I first came on, and I was assigned to the 7th District, I didn't have any problems until I went to Special Operations Division in 2000. And when I say problems, I eventually was assigned to the helicopter unit. And I had a sergeant who didn't want me there. He was one of my classmates. And I just kind of brushed it off. And then I went to events, which is where I am now. And when the Pachano stuff happened, that's when they started treating me differently. The officers didn't want to work with me, didn't want to talk to me. And then I got another assignment doing payroll, which was okay. So when I was asked to come back, I came back because that was something that I wanted to do, not realizing that because of the Petrano case, it was going to filter in to my career as a senior police officer. And when I walked in the door on February the 6th of 2017, the captain at the time saw me in the building and made the comment, "What is she doing here?" So they had two other men who were senior police officers at the time. They were working. They worked with Sunday and Monday off, and I think one of them had Friday and Saturday. And my lieutenant called me and told me, "You are not allowed to work day work. I'm putting you on the evening shift permanently." But the two guys were allowed to come back, and we all came back a month from each other. Like, one came back in November, one came back in December, and I was in the academy in January during the inauguration, and I left the academy in February and went to SOD.
Let me ask you this, Officer Clark, outside of the specifics of the Michelle Obama incident, as it relates to the broader scope of this lawsuit, what would you like to see happen with the Metropolitan Police Department related to the complaints in this lawsuit? What do you think will fix this?
I would like to see female officers, first of all, black female officers, being treated equally as Latinos, Hispanics, whites, whatever race you are. We need to be treated the same that they're being treated. And then as far as SOD is concerned, I would just like to see SOD be revamped. All the officials there, I would like to see them be replaced with new officials and just a clean slate. The department needs to know how to treat officers. If you treating me bad and other officers, how are you treating the citizens on the street of the District of Columbia? So if you're going to treat me bad, what are you going to do to them?
Please go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
They just need to revamp the department. I believe that if you're going to hire officials, if you're going to hire chiefs, it should be outside of the police department and get rid of, as they say, the good old boy network.
So, Attorney Temple, here's my question, though, because it was mentioned during the press conference that, you know, even though you mentioned what may be legally admissible goes back 4 years, but some of these complaints are as old as a decade. Well, that obviously doesn't just encompass the leadership of Chief Conti, but it goes back to Peter Newsham. It goes back to Kathy Lanier, who, need I remind us, is a woman. So,
you're absolutely right, Harold.
So what happened?
I mean, what happened is that it is what it is. I mean, that goes to show you the level of institutionalization here, the level and the deepness of the pattern, the practice, and the custom. It doesn't start with this present chief. It predates him. He comes into a position, and he's probably in his own mind trying to manage some of the dynamics that come with being the chief, with the leadership that he has, which is continuing from some of the previous administrations, and trying to manage the police department and what he thinks there. But at the same time, he is adapting and actually sanctioning, as did the prior police chiefs, what's happening in the layers beneath the top. And they get deeper as they go down, and then the activities. And so the problem is that nobody has had the courage and
the astuteness to say we need to overhaul this, and this is the law means this, and there are going to be implications. How in the world, in our wildest imagination, can a police officer utter the words that he is going to, or even considering killing the president's wife?
Yeah, the first lady.
And then show someone a gun and nothing happens?
Yeah. It looks like your law firm has a lot of work ahead. The plaintiffs still have work to do. You know, those that are on the job. And the department has a lot to consider all the way up to the top. We will continue to keep our ear to the ground as it relates to this case. Attorney Donald Temple, Officer Leslie Clark, thank you both for spending some time with us today and talking about this very important issue. Thank you both.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, September 24th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.